Welcome to Season 3 of Beyond the Wall, a Game of Thrones LCG podcast brought to you by Istril and Darknotch. We'd like to thank FFG and CardGameDB for their continued support, and the fantastic AGOT community as a whole for being the sole reason we do this cast. Thank you for letting us take you once again beyond the wall. It's our World's Recap episode, as well as a follow-up with our mentors. Because we get some gentle ribbing in, I want to take a moment to sincerely congratulate our new Joust champion Joe Mirando and Melee champions Tim Schur.
Welcome to another episode of Beyond the Wall. Sean, we're having a very special episode today because there's a huge event coming up, Red Saturday. It's probably bigger than Worlds, right?
I was going to say my birthday, but that passed, so I knew that wasn't what you were talking about. Yeah, I love Red Saturday. I always look forward to it. It's tradition that we drive down and hang out with New York.
That's it. And we're probably going to see the current world champion there because one of the Brotherhood Without Banners, what's his name again?
Joe.
Joe took it down. So we're going to get to go beat the current world champion. That feels great.
Yeah, he's a great player. I think the Brotherhood guys, they earned a bad rep because of that first episode that they did with their podcast. Yeah. But they're not bad people.
I liked them when I met them. They were fun. They were good players. Can't go wrong with that. And, you know, congratulations to Joe. But we're still going to try to win, right? Like, I like winning.
We're going to beat them.
Yeah. And if we don't, are we going to have to say something on the podcast or we'll just pretend it never happened?
We'll pretend like it never happened. I call that the white book approach. I'm just joking. I should cut that out.
No, leave that right there. It's beautiful. By the way, if you don't beat them, I'm going to look down on you.
That's fine. You already do. You're much slower than me.
So other than Red Saturday, the most important thing, what else is going on next week? I know this week we had a great win with our alt art competition, right?
We did. I was actually really surprised. I wasn't following the competition. I didn't know it started because I wasn't able to check Facebook. I was gone over the weekend. And when I got back, I saw it was a blowout. It was like 60-1.
Yeah, that's great. We do some nice alt art. I hear that the person that frames all that does a really great job.
Yeah, I should congratulate that person. Congratulations, nameless Beyond the Wall template maker.
So we did talk about Joe taking out Worlds, but we forgot to mention how many people were there, right?
Oh, of course.
163 showed up. It's the largest ever. I mean, we had like 140 or 141, Alex would say, in 2014. Mm-hmm. But we had 163, even though it was on a Wednesday. That just shows how much the game has grown. Because that Wednesday, that had to have hurt attendance.
To be fair, we would have been there. And it, I mean, that's 165 people, if it wasn't on Wednesday.
And then
we already know it
would have
been bigger.
Too, right?
No, it would have just been us.
No,
I'm sure there's a lot more people that would have. Yeah.
Would have caused the whole tournament to be different because we would have taken that down.
Yeah, because I'd be world champion and you'd all be playing with Island Monkey now as a new card.
That's what exactly would have happened. Sean would have taken the world championship. It would have been beautiful.
It's too bad. Next year?
There's something about tiebreakers that went on, but you know what? I wasn't paying enough attention. Were you paying enough attention?
I really wasn't paying attention. It has something to do with having to work during the day that the news is coming out. I just can't pay attention the same way.
Though I did notice that Worlds, all the Europeans that had won their tickets, surprise, surprise, did really well. It's like they're good players, and that's why they won before.
Wouldn't that be interesting if they had a Worlds where you had to win your way in? I don't know if that would work with Game of Thrones.
That's basically what the Europeans have to do. There was a couple cool decks that made the cut. We're going to talk to people on this episode about it. But in general, the decks were pretty standard, and I think that has a lot to do with these shipping delays that we saw. They really stagnated the meta a little bit. You know, it would have been extremely amazing to have Valor out for Worlds and the Lani box, but sadly.
That would have changed the environment hugely. But enough about this boring skillless Joust. What about your favorite part of Game of Thrones?
I mean, shout out to Tim, who took down Melee with a Stark deck. This was a pretty serious accomplishment, because not only did Tim win the Melee, but he actually topped 8 in the Joust, earning him entry into the illustrious Invisible Trophy Club of overall winners. So there's 4 of us now for this club, and I'm really happy to have Tim here because he's an amazing player, and it's proven by his dominance in the 2 different games, because they really are 2 different games.
Yeah, so Tim, you should check your mail for an invisible package. We've invisibly mailed you an invisible trophy.
Right, but he is getting a card design, right, Sean? Because you said we were all getting card designs.
Oh, yeah.
Tim, if you can email beyondthewall@gmail.com, we are going to hook you up with your card design. We're going to make that happen.
We can do that.
Yeah, it's going to happen.
Is the artwork going to be designed by your children as well?
Yes, my children will do the artwork, and you're going to do the framing.
Sounds good.
Yeah, but he can have any scene he wants drawn on it.
We have to balance it, though. We should stress that it has to be a playable card so that somebody can illegally play it.
That's it. And we're actually going to allow it in the tournaments that we play in.
I guess I'll... Yeah. Okay. I guess I'm never running a tournament ever again if I agree to this.
No, it's going to be balanced.
Okay.
You come to Ottawa, Tim, and you play that card. You're the only one. We'll let it go.
Yeah, okay. That's fair. I'll say that only Tim is allowed to play this card. Yeah. And John, you're not allowed to play your card. Only your children are allowed to play your card at our tournament.
That's fair, too.
It expires, though. The offer expires at the age of 10. So get them in early.
So I see people are buying draft packs, which is great. The Lions box is out. Lots of product on sale finally after Worlds. Kind of sad, but that's good.
It's exciting. I'd like to play draft. The 2.0 draft cycle looks like a lot of fun. Speaking of draft, I'm bringing a 1.0 draft pool designed by Peter Wilson to New York with me. Play on Friday before Red Saturday. So we need 8 bodies. I know we've got something like 5 people interested already. I've spoken for you. You're interested. And we need to get some more people in. We need a space as well. I don't know where we'll play it. I'm sure Dan will figure something out.
We could just show up at one of the stores somewhere, right? Like there's a couple stores in New York.
Yeah, true.
So if someone can think of a location, shoot us an email or just Facebook message us. Mm-hmm. And if you're interested in playing, shoot us an email or Facebook message us. Because me and Sean are coming down because we had this great invite from some of the New York crew to enjoy Thanksgiving with them. So we're going to do that. And then we kind of have a free day before the tournament.
It seems like a good time for a shout out to Dan Struhal for being awesome.
Yeah, always hosting us. And it's really appreciated. It makes us able to go. I don't know if we'd be able to go if we had to pay for the hotel every single time. So props to Dan.
Also, you're not allowed to draft Lannister because I'm sick of Lannister. Even in 1.0 form, we saw, 38% in the field at Worlds. I don't blame them. That's why he played at Canadian Nationals, and it was nearly an all Lannister cut. But that we really got to. It's got to go.
All right, so let's make a pack right here, Sean. No, we're not taking Lannister to New York.
That's the deck I wanted to bring.
Oh my God! All right, well I won't take Lannister. Sean's all in though.
It's so much better than every other deck. I know.
All right.
So, like every Worlds, we try and get the very best players onto our podcast. Unfortunately, this year we failed. The best player has his own podcast. The second best player is English.
Be careful here. This is crazy. You actually think the person that won Worlds is the best player?
No, not always. Except in 2014. Except in 2014, obviously.
Except in 20, of course, in 2014. But I mean, outside of that. So I think there's a lot of luck, and I think getting to the cut is the key. I think Stephen, Mr. Simone, as we call him on our cast, is going to agree with me when I say that it's about consistency in the cut, and that is where the best players are at.
Yeah, I mean, you know my rap over the years hasn't really changed. It's all about making the cut, and then from there, you know, it's matchup-based. Anything can happen. You and I have always kicked around, like, there should be more of like a point system if the game was more formalized, where we would just track, like, you know, who makes the most cuts, basically.
Well, that's what I do with the annals, although I haven't got it to the individual person's level. But so you did make the cut. I remember quoting you at some point saying you'd never missed a cut, and then the next year you missed a cut. But you made the cut at Worlds this year. So you've just come back basically from that. Actually, you were in and out for the Joust, so you won't tell us anything about the Melee. But aside from the fact that it was on a Wednesday, which sounds horrible, what are some overall thoughts coming out of Worlds from you?
Well, I would say this is a very difficult game to be good at, meaning like if you do play a deck that is more grindy and doesn't try to get your opponent all the way down to zero, then you're going to end up in a situation where there's just a lot of challenge math, and so that makes the game a little bit more difficult than in 1.0. And then if you're not going to play, if you're going to play a deck that's real aggro and gets them to zero, then it's really just a flip of the coin in your matches of who gets the bigger first snow into March, essentially, or things like that. So difficult game to be good at, and it was a very tough day of Joust. I mean, I played, you know, 7 Lanny and 1 Stark deck, all with first snow in March, and it's a nerve-wracking time. I'm just, every turn, I just think, they're going to get me to zero here or not? And so I'm just there, like, defending against that, and it was a tough day.
So I'd actually like to elaborate on that, because I heard you praise Ryan Jones, I think it was, or someone for not playing a get them to zero deck, and I've seen that terminology come from you, and I think I'm pretty sure I know what it means, but you're the first person I've seen use this as it pertains to Thrones, this getting to zero terminology. So do you want to elaborate on that a little bit for those of us not as quick on the uptake as I am?
Yeah, so that's a phrase that I've taken from Seth and Corey, and it basically means I'm going to get you, meaning you set up one character because of the variance of setups. I'm going to march you, put you down to zero on the board. Or you set up a few characters. What I'm going to try to do is turn one, hit you with a big kill event on your one big guy, then play first snow into march and get you to zero there. But basically it means get all your characters off the board so I don't have to think very much.
It's about putting someone in an unrecoverable position. In this game, there's a lot of times where you get to that wiped board state and there is no way to recover. You could top deck like a pro and it just wouldn't matter. The snowball has been rolling. So it's basically get to that point where the snowball's so big, there's no recovery.
Yeah. And I thought about a lot of why the game is like this right now. And it's mainly because gold is such a scarce resource. You lose a 6-cost guy and you're 6 gold behind now, and gold is so hard to come by for most houses. And it's really just on the designers and playtesters to fix that. I think they're pricing all the plots at too low of gold. I mean, I feel like when I get a Rose Road on setup, I've won the lottery.
Fair enough. So you weren't playing a get them to zero deck?
No. I was playing a deck that I thought had a very good matchup against Lanny, and I went 6-3 against Lanny on the day, and that's about what's expected with my deck. I thought I had a pretty good shot, and when I didn't see any Barra decks in my path in the cut, I really thought I was going to win the whole thing.
Yeah, I mean, yours was a Night's Watch deck. It was still heavily reliant on the wall. Does have a glaring vulnerability there than to Barra, as most of those do. But you were playing something that we really haven't seen much in the national competitive scene. For some reason, you were playing Lord of the Crossing.
Yeah, so I think Seth will post the list. We talked about posting it up. And essentially...
Whoa. Seth is going to post a deck list?
I believe he is going to post and talk about
how post their it. Shit because they're champs.
We're gonna post it. If we're not gonna post it, then that's on Seth and Corey. I want to post it because I think it could help influence Stalic a little bit. But essentially, the deck is crossing for two reasons. One, because we hate variants and wanted to get more neutrals in the deck. And
so you wanted more than 15 neutrals.
Is it 12 or 15? How does that? Is it
it's 15 on the fealty.
Yeah. I think we needed 20. We just 15 wasn't enough.
Okay.
You know, we needed like 3 little fingers, for example. Got to get that variance down. And the other reason being, if you don't get the wall, you can get big power turns against opponents who aren't really expecting it during like a 4-5 position turn, which is a very dominant turn for that deck.
I mean, I've seen people try and play Night's Watch Crossing with Jon Snow. Were you running Jon Snow?
No, we didn't have Jon Snow. Okay. It was basically, again, just similar to Tomas's deck. You saw him play against Jakob's offensive get him to zero winter deck.
You say offensive in both senses of the words, in that it is offensive to you and it is an aggressive deck.
I do mean in both senses of the term. such a good player as Jakob. He's always playing these like low-skill decks. But anyways,
you constantly accuse John of doing the same thing, don't you? No, Corey or Seth does that.
No, I accuse John of doing that.
He does too.
But I really love that Tomas Jakob 3-game match. It's like one of the only things I've watched, and I loved watching him bust Jakob up.
So there's this interesting comment I have on the state of the metagame and the decks that you're describing, Simone. Now, I know the banter person created the deck himself and stuff, but there was a very similar deck that did well at both Origins and at Gen Con, this Lion-Wolf deck. And do you know the name of that deck?
Lion-Wolf? No. Yeah.
It was called 95% Idiot Proof, because the objective of the deck was to throw down big guys and get people to zero.
Man. Yeah.
I love that.
And you can do like a ward and then a kill and a marched. And
yeah. That's it.
Yeah, I mean, that's the state of the game right now. And I made a Facebook post. I am optimistic. I talked with Nate and Danny a little bit. Like, I think they understand what's going on.
Yeah, they've been trickling in economy, and the trickle may need to increase. But... yeah, I think there need to be more options and more different ways to do the economy. And I don't know if the fix that you're talking about of, you know, the plots is doable without making all of the plots printed to date obsolete, which I don't think they can really afford to do.
Yeah, I mean, they could slowly start making these plots obsolete. But yeah, I think I see what you're saying, obviously. But yeah, the gold, I mean, across the board, like, why aren't all the plots have one or two additional gold? Maybe two? Like every plot. That might make it a little, maybe that's just too simplistic of a fix, but
mm-hmm. I know what you mean.
It's so scarce and so like.
Now, I do want to touch on this a little bit, because you say economy is so scarce, and yet you specifically took a deck like Thomas's and took away one of the economy cards, Fealty, which is really quite important to that deck to be able to use those, you know, two counting coppers and here to serve and so on, and yet still have these turns where you can match your opponent quite well because you're reliably using the fealty on ravens and old forest hunters and things like that.
Yeah, I mean, if you look at it, that was a concern. I think if you have the old forest hunter and you have the double counting, you can sacrifice some cards, for example, to get some of that gold back. And also, the deck has a lot of like cheap dudes. It's close. I agree with you there. It was a little bit of a tough decision, but we saw the upside of playing just better neutral cards over worse Night's Watch cards, more important than that one extra fealty reducer. But yeah, I mean, that is close. That makes it tough. I don't have a great answer there for you.
Fair enough. Now, did you feel lucky that you played that much Lannister? Because the deck does have a plus matchup?
I did feel lucky not having to face Vera dominance decks. But I didn't feel lucky having to play every Lanny deck having First Snow, which is... First Snow is like probably one of the hardest cards for me. But I thought like I'd play a bunch of Lanny decks without First Snow, because I thought that Lanny decks would be bringing Wildfire instead of First Snow, because they'd be playing against all these other Lanny decks. And
yeah, you'd think so too. That would have been my inclination. Now, maybe a step further, because we've talked about some of the intricacies of the game, but what was your experience at this Worlds? You've attended many previous Worlds, and we haven't really seen much comment on the organization, on the prize support, on the interaction with the developers like Nate and Danny, and with the community as well. I mean, those are a large part of the tournaments, and we haven't heard a great deal about them yet.
Yeah, let's see. The prize support was very good this year. You know, I'm not one for prizes that much, and I usually give them away, but they had awesome stuff. Every round they were giving out interesting things to the participants, all these kinds of deck boxes, all kinds of extra promos and tokens and stuff. So, I mean, I felt like just by playing six rounds of Swiss, I already had like six prizes. And then in the cut, they had some pretty good stuff. The only thing I didn't like in the cut was like the top four prize was like a sheet of Winds of Winter, I think, like an uncut sheet of cards, which is really...
So that's why you didn't make top four?
Yeah, that's why I didn't make top four, obviously. Oh, man, no, we got to talk about my top eight game for sure after this, but I made a big mistake, but...
It was up on the stream, yeah, you were... I thought you had it at the beginning.
I made the wrong play in the beginning, so He plays Illyn, and I'm sitting on Nightmares and Judgment in hand, and I know he has Treachery, so I just decide to take the ceiling play of making him kneel his Illyn, because I know next turn I'm going to fortify position him, but so I make him kneel it and then try to save, and then Hand's Judgment is Treachery, but he also had the Hand's Judgment, so really the right play would have been to just Nightmares Illyn, which is the play Corey would have made. And he berated me needlessly for not analyzing the downside. But, you know, overall, there's always next year. It's a tough game.
Long, tired day. We won't hold you against you too much.
Yeah.
I guess that's another point. So the organization, I know that the cut was, lots of people didn't make it on strength of schedule, but the cut was the next day. Yeah. You didn't have to play the ridiculously long days.
Yeah.
So that sounds like a plus as well. I didn't hear about like repairings or rules controversies or accusations of cheating or collusion or anything like that sort of cropping up.
No, I think overall it's pretty good. I mean, and as far as collusion and cheating goes, I mean, in Joust, there's a lot less of that. I mean, there's maybe some scouting. You know, I like to walk around and poke my head around a bit. So you know, but. but yeah, I don't think there was too much controversy anymore. I mean, for me, I feel like at least in the DC meta, we're all getting a little older and we just have less controversy in us these days. I think we're just more friendly now than
someone will step up to the plate. Don't worry.
Yeah, it'll come.
We got those new guys, the guys who won apparently have all the controversy. So where were you? Hey, by the way, let's talk about you guys for a second. Where were you guys at this tournament? Just weren't interested because the game's not good enough yet, or?
No, that wasn't it at all. This was going to be a Worlds year for me, and then my son was scheduled to be born sometime end of September, and plus or minus a few weeks. When you don't know exactly how things are going to go, I just couldn't make that call in like March or whenever I had to.
Yeah.
To come when I knew that even if things went according to due date, I'd be on like week four.
Yeah.
And you never know how that's going to play out. So
I didn't think the meta changed enough between Gen Con and Worlds for me. And like there was, one pack kind of, I would have been more excited. And, and when I say in a good place, I don't mean the game in general, which people can argue, but I meant like for me because of, just having played Gen Con, having a great time there. I just didn't think there was enough change.
Yeah, there wasn't. I mean, we almost brought Lanny Dragon, all four of us, because Corey, just watches us. There's only four of us and Corey this year. And we almost all played Lanny Dragon because we just didn't think anything changed. I mean, still thought that's like one of the best decks.
Well, yeah. Something's changed. I mean, there's more Night's Watch, and there's a difference in some of the plot games because of Summer Harvest and the winter and summer agendas, which see play.
Mm-hmm.
I think that changes things a little bit since Gen Con,
but not that much.
Change the percentage of Lannister.
Yeah.
And again, if we can talk about that for a second, we really don't feel, I say we because it's just DC, we really don't feel that Lanny is the problem. It's the combination of Put, Tears, Marched, and First Snow. And I'd like to see all four of those just go on the list and be done with it.
That would be so good. I have to totally agree.
And you put all four of those on the list, and then there you go. You can only pick one of them.
So that's your pro. Because I guess that's the other thing. Worlds is a reasonable time to look back on the previous year and forward to the next and sort of see what you'd like to see changed. I know you mentioned the economy, but you think you want to knock the meta away from these down to zero decks.
Yeah, probably. And we might even have to do something about the wall, because that is a dumb card too. So...
Well, clearly you've still got something. You've still got something in the tank if you're making the cut at Worlds this year.
I've got Seth and Corey. I mean, basically. I work a lot now, so I don't really play as much. But we did do a week at Chad's before. So we did like a whole – like on Friday before Halloween, we went to Chad's, stayed there for all the way till Worlds started. That's when we did all of our playtesting and prepping. So
tell us about that.
Yeah, that was good.
You were giving me like little texts like, we don't know what we're going to play.
So we were really on three decks, which was Night's Watch Crossing at the time, or Night's Watch Fealty at the time, and Lanny Targ and Stark Fealty, but Stark Fealty with like big dudes, like that 48 character Stark Fealty, basically.
Mm-hmm.
And
really,
yeah, we like that with the 9 gold plots and stuff. Because gold,
I use the 9 gold plot in my Stark Crossing and my Stark Fealty right now.
I like the 9 gold plot 2-ish sometimes, but I find that super character Stark isn't as resilient as your standard.
Yeah, I mean, we like the consistency of top decking guys and having the big gold plots, but yeah, it has a lower ceiling, I would agree.
Yeah.
But so then we were playing all that, and we were playing against like Lanny Winter and a bunch of net decks, and just, you know, it was a big playtesting weekend. It was really fun. It was reminiscent of just like playtesting in 1.0, just like hanging out with everyone. So it got me back into the game more, because I hadn't played all year except for like a couple of days before Gen Con. So that was good. And then I'm able to still be decent at the game because of all the time we played in 1.0. And, you know, it's basically the same. It's the same rules, so, and a lot of the similar concepts. So I feel like I didn't lost a lot of skill there. But, yeah, the playtesting was good. And I think what I really liked and what I really wanted to play, I just couldn't, was Martell Night's Watch. But it's just so bad against – it's so good against Lanny, but so bad against a lot of other stuff. And that's – it was sad that I couldn't play my Martell Watch deck.
In the end, you played nothing but Lanny, and yet you would have been fine.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I don't think my day was representative of other people's day, though.
No, I know.
But yeah, I mean, that would have been awesome for me. Like, that would have been great. I love that deck. I just feel like I'm in so much control there with Gashen and Kraven and Milks and, you know, just all kinds of stuff.
Yeah. Well, maybe that's a question that we can sort of wrap up on now. I mean, get them to zero decks are fundamentally the sort of concept of aggro.
Yep.
At its core. And maybe this is giving too much credit to the designers or whatever, but it seems like it is easier for newer players to grasp aggro, it is easier to build aggro, and it is easier to balance it within the card pool so that it works, and that control has to hit a certain critical mass before it's even functional, and if you don't get it quite right, you get an oppressive environment that where the core mechanics of the game don't matter anymore. So maybe is this natural that in the early game, what we've, you know, the early year, as the card pool progresses, aggro is the strategy that gets the most redundancy and the most basic function, and that control emerges afterwards? Or is that just bad design and that they screwed something up?
I'll let John go first on this question.
Well, let's take a look at 1.0. The early days of 1.0 was completely controlled by what?
By Lanny.
Yeah, as a control house, a soft control house, right? And they went a little too far from that. But I think the key to a balanced game is all three or four types of decks being prevalent. All those types of decks present. But what we have is basically a very heavy aggro environment. So I think that's mostly due to this problem of gold and too much focused removal for aggro that came in the core set. The fact that we have so much neutral removal really does pose some problems.
And you don't think that Valor as a control tool at least slows aggro's presence down allows?
No, because, no. And this is, I really truly believe this, that the designers and playtesters, and this is very much messed up that card. It's like they, I don't know what they were thinking. 2 gold. Like, that should be a 6-0-0, or it should be 3-0-0 can't be saved, or something. Like,
yeah.
Whatever they were doing there is just ridiculous. Like, did I even playtest these cards? This makes me really upset.
I have to agree with Steve here. I really don't think Valor is going to have this huge impact that people seem to think it is going to on the meta.
Valor in the short term is going to be an aggro card for Greyjoy. Like, they just helped in another aggro house. Like, what?
I have to agree.
Greyjoy needs all the help they can get.
That is just I'm not sure what they were doing there with that card. But you know what they're going to end up having to do is they're going to see that it didn't help anything, and they're going to print a new reset.
Yep, that's what they're going to have to do. So I think they could have made Valor 5 gold, and they probably would have been fine.
Yeah, maybe it would have been close, but yeah, maybe like 5 or 6 gold. I think it'd be close. It still might be bad.
I don't think you guys are right.
No, I mean, no, don't get me wrong. We're going to try as hard as we can to build around that plot and make a deck, but it's going to be tough.
I think we've seen from Counting Coppers, we've seen now with Blood of the Dragon and things like that, that a 2-gold plot can still be completely playable. Now, obviously, those are not the same kind of effects. Those are, you know, that's a constructive effect that you don't need to reestablish your board presence from. You know, it is a different ballpark. But so I don't think... I think you may be right in that its initial impact is not going to be as high as people are saying. I do think that if that's the case, more economy trickling into the game will increase its impact.
Yeah.
And just naturally, as more of these cards, like we got a King's Back, Killing Balon Solar or whatever, this next chapter back, and another economy card in the next one, and if they pick up the pace on those economy cards and give us a few different options on how to build, you'll find that. Because right now, if you have an Arbor, you can Valor.
Yeah, I mean, I think I'm optimistic. Yeah. I'm optimistic that they're gonna get it. I agree with you. I just think that's not going to be in the short term. We still have a few more months.
It'll be fun.
Yeah, I think it may. I think it'll see some play initially, and it will change the way people approach things. But I think it won't be in 85-95% of decks it was in first edition. And I think its percentage will climb as we get access to more different kinds of economy that are resilient to the Valor itself. And I think we're going to see its prevalence just increase over time until we hit some point where you've got the economy to run it.
The other thing is, unlike 1.0, where people are running one ofs of Fear of Valor, people are already running triplicates of these big characters because they have such a big impact on the board. And because there's more of these characters that have a giant impact, we're going to see more dupes, and we're going to see Valor having less of an impact because of those dupes and saves. I think we're going to see a lot of bodyguards in.
I think you're entirely wrong in your description. I think having triplicates in the decks makes Valor more impactful, not less impactful.
No, that's true only in a small way if you can't recycle. But we have so many nice plots now that move things from dead piles and stuff.
We have one plot that does that, and it is a nice plot. Yeah, so many is an exaggeration there.
Yeah, well, hold on. So many.
You run two of them. Maybe that's what he's saying.
Exactly. Two of them in your deck is a lot.
I mean, if you're thinking of the fact that Valor can generate not only a bunch of cards that enter the dead pile, but 6 dead cards in his deck, that increases its power level considerably. Yes, he can play plots to play around that. Duplicates are not a reliable way to save a character. You can't count on drawing the duplicate for the character that you want to see.
Plus other things to help, and then you have a card that shuffles, so the one guy that didn't die, you shuffle through or whatever, or when you draw that card that would have been dead, the next turn you shuffle it, and then you can play it again. I mean,
I think if you're running triplicates, you're going to start running bodyguards and things like that.
Does that mean it might be better for the game, because then they're running all these bodyguards and shit and not good cards?
Quite possibly.
Let's just say I don't think there'll be a lot of bodyguards running, and I just don't think Valor will have the massive impact. I think everyone's just going to slip in a close call and things feel okay.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not really sure other than the fact that people will have a hard time playing with it unless they're playing Greyjoy. They won't know how to set up a Valor. Like, and maybe this is just the 1.0 elitism talking, I don't know, but they won't know how to set up for that card because of how low the gold is. But I mean, we'll try. We'll give it a shot.
Simone, thanks for joining us and for performing well with a deck that had a composition different than expected. I hope to see the deck list by the time this podcast airs so I can link it as well. Our goal today was to interview people who had brought something that wasn't known to the meta.
Yeah.
And I'm glad that DC did that.
Yeah, thanks a lot.
Are you DC?
Yeah, I'm still DC. Although I did meet a lot of the Northern California guys who represented at the tournament, and I want to just quick shout out to them. I know they were playing Lanny Winter, and I've been making fun of that, but that's okay. I still like all those guys, Brad and Alejandro and the whole crew, and I hope to see them pretty soon up here in the Bay Area.
All right, we are joined by another player who made top 8. This one's better and more famous.
The Brad.
This one.
Well, the other one was Simone.
Oh boy.
One of the goals here was to get players who had played decks that weren't known to the meta. You know, we know that there are other podcasts that have regular hosts that attended and can give a better picture of worlds, or hosts that won and can give a better picture of that. We're going to be the only ones to get a whole bunch of runner-ups with decks that are interesting. So that would be you.
That's a noble cause.
It is. Now, I remember when last we spoke, you said you were going to bring some Tyrell cards in a Worlds deck.
Yes, I was, but then the Lanny box and the Valor pack didn't come out, so I didn't really want to go back to the beginning and try to make a new deck.
Fair enough. So maybe to start off, what was your experience with Worlds this year? You've been several times, you've won it before, sort of organization-wise, the community-wise, the prize support, the controversies. I don't know the controversies.
Do we have a new villain, Sam?
A new villain?
Well, yeah, because DC used to be this evil villain, but they've really mellowed out. They're not evil or nothing anymore.
Yeah, I mean, they were barely even there, so it's tough to really call them the bad guys. So.
Yeah, but now we have the Banter Boys.
That's well,
not Banter, Brotherhood.
I'm not going to elect them as the new villains, but other people can do that if they want to. Yeah, I guess from my perspective, I'm a little different because I only live 3 hours away in a car, so I don't have to make a whole lot of
Wait, time. You live in a car 3 hours away?
No, it is a 3-hour drive. So it's not like it's a huge demand on my time or when I need to be there or when I need to be at an airport and stuff. So the fact that it was on Wednesday didn't matter a whole lot to me. I mean, I just had to take time off of the places that I normally would be on Wednesdays and Thursdays. So that was pretty much the same, although I can definitely see why people would be upset about it.
First, I want to say that it was really mean of Alex to bring up the fact that you've been living in a car.
Yeah.
That's kind of cruel.
Why I mean, we bring him on the show. That?
Maybe it's a nice car. I don't know.
It's not.
What do you drive, Sam?
I drive a 98 Chevy Lumina. Probably the worst possible car you can think of.
What about prize support and general feel? I've been to Worlds a few times, and there was this great Thrones community. The last time I went, it was gotten a little bit bigger, and it was a little bit more diluted. What was it like this time? This was the last time it's going to be all jam-packed together with the other LCGs.
To start with prize support, I thought it was a little better. I mean, the promo was pretty poor, but they did some interesting stuff actually in the tournament. Every round you were playing for something, so they'd put a card in front of you and your opponent, and then whoever won the round would get it. And it started off with crap like Tumblestone Knights, but it was ending with tokens and the Game of Thrones promo from Gen Con. And so it gave some incentive to actually keep playing later on, which was kind of cool. They gave us these cool deck boxes, which looked pretty nice, so I was happy about that. And overall, I thought the prize support was fine. I don't know. I never really come there expecting to get hundreds of dollars worth of stuff, so that's not really what I care about. For the community, from my perspective, there's a lot of people there that I've met the last couple of years that weren't there, which was kind of interesting, but I normally come to see the DC guys, the WASA guys that I already see, and some random other sampling of people that I hope are there, so it's always nice to meet all the new European people, too, that always show up, and you're like, I don't know who they are, and then they're just excellent players and normally pretty nice people, so...
Yeah, it turns out European champions make the top 16 at Worlds. That's
they're pretty good. I played against two of them, and they're both quite good players, so...
What about space constraints and stuff? I mean, John said, this was the last year that they're packing all the Star Wars stuff in. Mm-hmm. Was the fact that it was on a Wednesday just made it fine?
Yeah, honestly, the space was fine. We had plenty of space for the main Thrones event.
Let's talk about what really matters then, the actual game. So what did you play in Melee?
In Melee? I had left before Melee started. Actually, no, I guess I left slightly after. But...
Oh. That hurts, Sam. Okay.
Well, I'm kind of upset. I really want one of those playmats that was the top 16.
Oh, the battle of the naval superiority ones?
Yeah, that's my favorite
card. They're really nice, yeah.
Yeah, they were gorgeous. So, Sam, what did you see when you were playing? Is there any memorable games within the Joust? Did you see some decks that you thought were just innovative and really cool? And then we're going to start bugging you about your own deck.
Interesting games. I guess I'm a pretty slow player, so I don't actually normally watch many other people's games during the rounds. I watched a couple of my friends play next to me that lost on 14 and 13 power respectively in 50-minute games, so that was kind of interesting. They're just dumb Lannister grinds that they couldn't quite close with their Night's Watch Lanny decks. But otherwise, honestly, it was all pretty standard stuff. I didn't see any insane things that I wasn't expecting for the most part when I was watching.
All right. Well, the first deck to show up on the stream to really surprise me was in fact yours, and it surprised me for a couple of reasons. First of all, when I saw the matchup, Targ, Lord of the Crossing, played by you against the Stark, and they mentioned that you were running Blood of My Blood and so on, I figured, man, Stark has got to be bad. They've got the Bran. They've got the tools to deal with you. They're probably at least as fast as you. Is that one of the worst matchups? Because you seem to luck into getting Drogo early on to really put the pressure and the squeeze on him with two Blood of My Bloods in that game.
I actually don't think the matchup is that bad. I probably played it like 10 times, some version of Stark Fealty, and I think I won the majority of them. Not in the tournament, but just when we were playtesting. And I don't know exactly all the factors that go into like me winning, but it's a lot easier for me to
that's
win.
That's a very humble approach.
I don't know why, but I know I win.
Generally, I feel like it's a lot easier for me to force through some like important challenges than it is for them. Like, the two Song of Summers are very innocuous, but they make your challenge math so much easier. Like, your board is just so much better than your opponent's the turn you play those, and you have two of them, that it lets you win a lot of multiple sets of challenges that you wouldn't normally win, and it puts you ahead. A lot of times, like Recaro, if you Blood of My Blood for him and have, like, an Ago out, and you get to intimidate two things, you can just stay ahead of your opponent's board, even if you're kind of giving up a little bit of tempo in the long run. So that's kind of what I just found. A lot of my games, my opponents would have big, crazy board states, and I would just intimidate two guys, and I'd end up winning four challenges, and two of them would be unopposed, and I'd get four power out of that turn, and like, you just need to do that a couple times, and you'll win most of your games.
So maybe starting with the plot deck, because there are these two choices I want to discuss. One is that you brought back your favorite Claim 2 plot, Clash of Kings.
Yes.
It turns out the winning power is good for winning games?
Yes, winning power challenge is good. The number 9 in your initiative space is still incredibly good. It is pretty much better than everything that people play. Like, going second in a Lords of the Crossing deck is really nice, because then you almost always win all of your challenges, and as long as they can't do anything too horrible for you, like, it puts you pretty far ahead. It also has random synergy with Silver Steed. You can get giant power swings, too. Just normally when I want to play the plot, if I can get some kind of double challenge off on it.
Now, how often was that a plot that you played just to build up your power total, or how often was it just the closer?
Most of the time it was the closer. Sometimes it was just an initiative thing. I wanted to go first and like double intimidate with Recaro or something, and then try to close the next turn. But normally it was just my closer.
Double intimidate with? How do you double intimidate with Recaro if you're not playing the summer plot?
Oh, well, you hope they do, or are you waking the dragon?
Oh, you're waking, okay. All right. The other thing that is actually probably, for me, a slightly more controversial call, although the community may say otherwise, is that you're running the trading with the Pentoshi. No, I mean within the plot deck. You're running trading. Why?
I was finding, originally I had like a Summer Harvest in my deck, and it just wasn't reliable enough as my giant gold plot. Against some of the winter decks or decks that play first snow, where you're just like, I need a million gold and I need to play two characters that won't get first snowed. Like, you need the guaranteed ability to do that, and no one plays naval, so it's not like that's really something you need to fear. I was finding times where, like, I'd have a Danny and a Ago in my hand, and I was like, I need to get both of these out, and I'll probably win every challenge this turn, or I'll win three challenges, and that will be good enough no matter what they do. It's pretty much a hedge against the winter decks, I'd say.
A hedge against the winter decks. Okay, and how much of the Summer Harvest did you see played in general that makes Pentoshi kind of not a great play?
A couple people play it. I didn't expect to lead with trading. It was more, I figured I would win most of my games within six plots, and trading was just something I wanted to have against matchups that were a little worse.
Okay.
So I wasn't leading with it probably 95% of the time. It would just come up on like turn two or three against winter decks.
All right. So now that we talked about the plots, tell us a little bit about the Dothraki Sea. Was that a good call? Were they useful?
Yeah, I thought they're pretty good, actually. Like, one thing about Recaro is he kind of sucks. Like, he's really not that good for a six drop. He's just like a really, really bad King Robert for the most part. But when he costs 1 gold or 3 gold, he suddenly becomes efficient enough that you would want to have him in your deck. and Dothraki Sea does a little bit of that. The Silver Steed helps too, because sometimes you'll need to win a power challenge, and then you just really only want to make another power challenge, so you can put a guy in with a power icon and do that. You're trying to win quickly, but like obviously you don't have that much renown, so you're not going to be winning in like two turns. But I think Dothraki Sea is like a good enough tempo play in this deck that it's pretty useful.
I think, you know, you mentioned the Silver Steed and some of the synergy with Clash of Kings. It's certainly not a card I've seen two of even in any of my decks. I've had a couple with one, and it always seems like it might be the 61st card or the 60th, depending on the deck. But one that does actually surprise me a fair bit is the Notorious Omission. And I think I can maybe justify it, but I'd like to hear your logic. Crown of Gold.
Unfortunately, it wasn't entirely based upon logic that I came to my conclusion to not play Crown of Gold. Originally when I built the deck, I just wanted to play the Blood Riders and just see how they functioned and if they were like a good core to build around. And because of that, I had probably had like 62 cards and I didn't have a Crown of Gold in my deck yet. And I was like, well, shit, I just won't play Crown of Gold right now and we'll see how this deck does. And it did fine. And I kept doing that and I cut it to 60 eventually and I never had a Crown of Gold. And then I was like, wouldn't it be funny if I played this Targ deck without Crown of Gold and I did well with it? Well, let's see what happens. And it kind of just never came about. I mean, I can make up dumb reasons like, I don't want to win through variance or something like that, but realistically, I don't think there's a lot of reason to not play Crown of Gold in your deck. I don't know if you actually have a good reason, but...
I know, it's good for the removal, but your deck does seem to be more based on a constructive board presence of having some of the key pieces on the board, and that 4 gold hurts your opponent's position, but it doesn't build up yours or threaten anything.
That
right?
is true. But I feel like it is too efficient to really not play if you're not trying to do it and be funny.
So you played this deck a bunch of times. You said you tested it against Stark. You clearly played it a whole bunch on the day. What were some of its strengths that emerged from playing it and some of its weaknesses?
Like I said, I think the 2 Song of Summer is incredibly strong right now. I found a lot of games, if I had a reasonable flop, I wouldn't even have to start with Calm Over Westeros, which is normally what you have to do when you're trying to build up a board state, because I'd have Song of Summer and my characters would just be bigger than all my opponents, so I wouldn't lose any challenges anyway, or at least not any meaningful ones. So I really like that about the deck. It gave it a lot of strength that I didn't really see originally. Normally, I started with one and I was like, God, I just wish I had a second one of these, and I was like, well, I guess I'll just play a second one. Other strengths? I think that Khal Drogo and Silver Steed give a lot of flexibility in the challenge order you get to do that crossing decks might not always have, because it's you don't even need a huge icon spread when you can go military power or military power, and you don't even have to worry about having an intrigue icon sometimes, or if you do have one, you can throw it in at any point. And I thought that was pretty interesting. Like I had a Martell Lords of the Crossing deck that I ended up not really wanting to do because some of the cards didn't come out that were going to be out later. And it was a lot harder to actually sequence your challenges to maximize them compared to this deck, where you can kind of just get 4 challenges in and win 3 of them normally. Mm-hmm. Drakaris is really good.
Drakaris is really good, yeah. I think
people didn't know that. I feel like Dani is a little underrated as one of the big 7 drops. I think she's incredibly powerful. And I feel like she doesn't get as much love as some of the other big guys do.
Mm-hmm. There is a little omission next to Dani that you're not running Daria. Is that deliberate as well?
She would have been fine. I wanted a little bit more stand against some of the Bera decks and things like that, so I ended up going with Handmaidens, even though they're like a really bad first challenge character to play in a crossing deck.
Oh, but they're great with Hot Pie.
They are great. Well, Daria is also a companion. So.
Oh, right, yeah.
Oh, there's tons of companions in.
Yep. I felt like I was missing out on, like, I probably didn't have enough lords to really, and ladies to make her.
No Illyrio and no Littlefinger, yeah.
Yeah, I think I only have 9 total, so it's a little low on the count. Waking the Dragon was also very good. I forgot to mention that. I feel like that's not a very commonly played card.
I use it primarily as attachment control in a bunch of decks, both on Viserys and on sometimes like sometimes I just need to get a Milk of the Poppy off Drogo.
Yep. I got to use it to turbo out a character with my Hot Pie. I got to kneel my Sir Jorah to reduce it, and then Waking the Dragon to stand my Sir Jorah, and then do it again.
I love that. I mean, it costs you the 2 gold for Jorah because he comes back to your hand. But
betrayal counters on him already.
Ah, excellent.
Pretty sick. But yeah, that card is pretty good too, especially when you have Dothraki Sea and Blood of My Blood, because you can get free challenges out of them, and it doesn't matter if they're getting bounced back anyways.
Mm-hmm. Right, and so some weaknesses of the deck, some things that you were worried about in the field, or even if you thought they weren't going to be there, that you think can be a problem for the deck?
Things you change now?
I don't know if exactly what I would change right now, but I would probably play a little more conservatively against the like triple tiers decks. It's you have 6/6 drops that get tiered, and that really sucks buttholes if that happens to you sometimes. But like my loss in the top 8 was my Khal Drogo got tiered, and it was against a Tywin Reducer setup, and I just kind of fell too far behind to ever come back. And if I could do it differently, I probably would have played in the line that didn't hurt me so badly, and I feel like that was really the biggest weakness of the deck. If they exchange their 1 gold for your 6, you're a little too slow to come back.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But otherwise, I felt pretty good about the deck. Like, I mean, Dracarys is pretty good against everything, and you can win most of the challenges that you want to just because of the strength of Lords of the Crossing. So I didn't really find that there was a horrible matchup in the long run.
And you played this in the Laughing Tree the day before as well?
Yep. I went 5-1. I lost a close one to Lannister. It was like 13-15 at the end, and I couldn't. He just got too many big dudes in the long run that I couldn't push through like one more power challenge.
Nice, but that's a fair bit of mileage out of one deck.
Yep. And then in the actual Worlds tournament, my only loss in the Swiss was to a Metamate. So
to Dan or to Brad or
to Brad? Yep.
Okay, who was playing a Night's Watch line?
Yep.
And so what was it about the Night's Watch line that got you? Or was it just officially not collusion, but possibly?
I will not comment, but he did beat me. The deck is, the Night's Watch line deck has a lot of choke elements, and I fell a little too far behind. Like, sometimes you can just get too claimed out of a game, and there's not much you can do.
Uh-huh. And so, and then the final, or in the cut you mentioned, it was a Tears of Lys. Now, one thing that we like to do wrapping up is, you know, Worlds is a good time to look back on the year, and we're a year into the card game, and clearly you've consistently found some pretty interesting decks and so on. But what do you feel going forward either has to happen or is going to happen from what we've seen in the card pool? And what the next Worlds would look like, just in a vague sort of sense.
I think Valor will change a lot of stuff. I haven't playtested enough with Valor to really define what the metagame's going to look like. Or, I mean, I guess we'll also be like, I don't know, somewhere between 6 and 12 chapter packs further into the game. But
probably a deluxe box, yeah.
I mean, I think Valor will probably counter some of those unbeatable Lannister like mid-game setups where they have a bunch of 6 and 7 drops with Renown and you can't really push through any challenges and eventually they just win the game or things like that, and we'll probably get a little more deck diversity because of it.
And any big wishes? What's, you know, either in a restricted list sense or a card design or something like that that you think the game is missing that would help it going forward?
Well, fortunately for me, if I think there's a card design that needs to be included in the game, I can try to do that. So my hope is that my first card design comes out before Worlds next year, but I don't know if that will happen.
So then, yeah, all right. Well, then we look forward to seeing that card design and hope it is out in time for Worlds. Thanks so much for joining us, Sam.
Thank you for having me once again.
Welcome to another fine-ass episode of Beyond the Wall.
Today we are joined by both Ryan and Matt. Ryan did not actually get to speak much last time, so Glazer's going to try to be a little bit quiet. But he's joining me because Alex's wife is sick, so can't come on. And Sean just had no excuse, really. He just thought he was better, so.
Well, wouldn't you be sick if you had to be married to Alex?
No. You maybe.
As John realizes he has to edit.
Yeah, this is going to be horrible. So, Ryan, we didn't get to hear too much from you on the last episode, and I'd love to hear the reason why you decide to come and be part of this program.
I have started playing Thrones, I guess, last year at Gen Con. My brother and I went, picked up the core box, and we just played it casually for a little while. And so then Worlds came around this year, and I tried to get into X-Wing. That was my primary game. That's what's competitive around my meta right here in Alabama. But I couldn't get an X-Wing. So I tried to get a ticket for any game I could, and I got a ticket for Thrones. And it just, at that point, sparked this interest that, hey, I want to be competitive in this game. I actually want to go and have a chance to, you know, win a couple of games at least.
So, Ryan, you're going to Worlds in what, 2 days? 3 days?
Yeah, I fly out Tuesday morning.
All right. And what are you taking?
I'm actually taking your Targ Night's Watch deck.
Excellent decision. I hope you have at least fun with it. And what's your objective?
My objective is to go 500, is to win half my game. So I think there's 8 Swiss rounds. So I'm looking to win 4 games.
All right. We're going to be trying to follow you live. And Glazer, I know, has actually already bought the pom-poms and the little skirt that he's going to wear while cheering for you. Right, Glazer?
Yeah, just don't ask what's under the skirt.
We know what's under the skirt. Nothing. Same as your kilts.
Hey, your hands are not enough.
Okay, that's true.
According to UPS, my foam finger arrives on Monday.
Oh, so that just comes dirty in context.
We're hoping you hit that 500, Ryan, and maybe you can start and tell us a little bit about the
homework. Ryan, I don't know your last name.
Payne.
Yeah, wait, what?
Payne.
Pain?
Pain? Yeah, pain is in Pain Train.
Oh, man. You should just quote Rocky 3 all day.
Okay, 1 second. I forgot that Aaron's on the cast. Let me fix this.
Did you just mute
Okay. Everything will be better.
You see, Aaron Glazer requires depressants to talk to.
Is it accurate?
The only way I can take him seriously is when I'm really drunk.
Okay, whatever. I'm just seeing how long I can make us go before we get to talking about actual Thrones.
Yeah. So, Matt and Ryan, and why don't we start a little bit with Ryan? I gave you each slightly different homeworks and things I wanted you to work on. Why don't you tell everyone about that while me and Glazer mute and just listen?
Well, so my kind of personal homework was to write down and go through what I marshaled during games, what my opponent marshaled, how we set up, plot choices, all of those types of things. That was my big homework, was to record everything that went on during the game so that I could look back and use that to improve, get better, and find where I made mistakes, where I could have done things a little bit differently.
How'd that go? Did you find that journaling exercise was actually useful, or did you find it just horribly boring and it didn't give you any value? And don't be afraid to say that I was stupid telling you to do it.
And Ryan, just be honest, because we know it was John's idea, so it was probably really shitty.
Well, it's something that I've kind of taken from other games that I've done, as like thinking about like X-Wing or something like that. Like a lot of times I was recording what I did. So in this instance, like being able to see, okay, like how did I come back from this setup, or what could I have done differently? That was the big key, especially like my biggest difficulty right now is challenge order. And especially when you get tricky things on the board, like Illyrio, for example, and I can stand, and I've got Miri, and I'm trying to push that, you know, challenge through. It's okay, which order do I do this? And just how can I get the best out of the most out of my challenges? So it was really helpful for me to go through.
Can I be serious for a moment? Something that I suggest you keep an eye on as you do this. Try and look at how challenges would have been different if you had chosen to go first or second, and marshaling would have been different as you chosen to go first or second. Like, because I've played 5 bajillion games of this, but I've been playing a lot less lately, and I find that a lot of my gut instinct about when to go first and second is quickly getting screwed. It's almost never a straight, like, I just go second with this deck, or I just go first with this deck, unless you're, you know, Greyjoy and bad at Thrones. So just keep an eye on, like, when you would prefer going first and second, and what you think has changed based on that decision.
I have to second that, because you have some great key things. You know, you talked about Miri, you talked about Illyrio, but you have Ghost too, and you know, using Ghost early to prevent someone from stopping your challenges can be very, very effective. So it does make it a little more complicated. And the one thing I found with that deck, and I played it probably a couple dozen times now, is knowing when to counting coppers on turn one or two in order to fill your hand to get key components against one of your opponents is really tough to make that call. So that's something you also probably want to keep in mind all the time. When do you need to get those key cravens or key things to shut down your opponent?
That actually happened during one of my games. I actually opened with counting coppers for that reason, and was able, like, I wanted to go second in that situation as well. Especially if I can get Craven or Poppy, because I want to be able to react to what my opponent does. But it makes it tough when I have both Ghost on the board as well as, you know, those kind of lockdown effects in my hand, you know, trying to decide whether to go first or second. So that's a good
point. In a way, Ghost is better if you're second, right? Like, Ghost can make sure they can't defend that key challenge, sure. But then they just know that they're attacking with that character at that point. By going second, they have fewer options. Like, they have to leave two things. They have to functionally leave an extra thing standing if they want to be able to defend something, because one of them is going to be useless.
Yeah, otherwise you just push those unopposed through, which is really nice. So, Matt, you had homework too. What was yours?
Yes, my homework was to play a bunch of games with the hand-picked Skype group that you have formed, Mr. Naj. Unfortunately, my Skype group failed me this week. Plus, I was very busy, so it's not totally on you, Aaron.
I played you.
Oh, that was a week. That was over a week ago. That was before this set of homework. But we had a good match, and we can talk about that today.
Sure.
Yep.
Whenever you're ready.
Yeah. The other homework assignment I had that I think Ryan and I both had was to start a new deck from scratch. I think we'll talk about the results of that experiment.
For sure. And actually, I tried to build the same deck as well so that the three of us could look at the different styles. And we're going to have Glazer critique us. What I wanted was Seth Lowe to come on and critique us, because Seth is kind of known for bashing down people for playing bad cards, and I thought he'd be the perfect person. However, sadly, he's getting ready for Worlds. And I think actually, Matt, that was the main problem with that escape group this week, was everyone was kind of Worlds prep. Yeah. So they didn't have a lot of free time for anything. So I know I've been helping a lot of people do their Worlds testing.
No worries.
So one of the other things we talked about was that you had been, you know, guessing people's plots, still doing Duck Out Loud, right? That's still key.
Yes.
The last week we were supposed to be doing Duck Out Loud, but also you were going to be trying to guess what's in people's hands. And we played a game and you were doing that. You were saying, okay, you could have this event and that event. So I saw a lot more usage of that. Did you find that was helpful?
Absolutely. In fact, I could admit that the one house that I'm becoming the best at guessing what's in their hand is Lannister, for whatever reason. I think it's because Lannister doesn't really have that many tricks. It's not exactly Targaryen, where you have to look out for all sorts of things. Yeah. With Lannister, it's just, okay, what if they have Put to the Sword? All right, I do this. What if they have Tears of Lys? Okay, I do that.
I had tried to also talk to you a little bit about your opponent's pacing and how a slow or a fast opponent can get you to play differently. And that was one of the reasons I actually wanted you to play Glazer. Glazer is known as a super high rusher. Mm-hmm. He hates it when people play slow, and he will pester people, not because he's trying to make them misplay, but because he can't stand a slow player.
I mean, that's not true on, like, Octagon as much. It's true when we're testing for major tournaments, but I'm usually, like, playing, like, three games at once when I'm playing on Octagon, when I'm playing randoms.
But it's true in live, because I know a lot of people come to me and said, you start to go mad, Glazer, when people are slow.
Yeah, but it wins me games.
Yeah, because you get them to rush. So that's why I wanted you to play Matt, because I thought he'd get that pressure, but you guys didn't use voice chat, I guess, that time. Yeah, so
unfortunately. But I sensed it. I sensed some little bit of a rushing attitude there.
Well, that's just because I've got my gold counted and like three cards face down by the time you're done marshalling, but whatever.
So the key to this is not to have your opponent push you to play any differently than you would normally. And it can be really hard to learn that skill. It's so easy to get frazzled in these big events, I find, especially when you run into a player, someone that's known, and all of a sudden they're telling you to go quicker and you're thinking, oh man, have I been slow playing this whole time? Or no, that guy's just a freaking speed hawk or whatever it is. Don't worry about it. Like, you gotta
didn't
focus.
Curse at me.
I know, I'm trying hard. So, Ryan, how many games did you get in that you journaled?
I got in 4 games. That was it. My wife's birthday was this week, so we traveled this weekend. So I only got 4 games in.
What was the biggest takeaway from your journaling?
One thing I noticed was getting the Beggar King on the board is exceptionally strong. Like, that card is very, very good. Like, I wasn't so sure about it at first, but I kind of tried to keep count of how much gold that netted me. It was pretty significant each time I got it on the board.
Non-limited economy is amazing, and that's one of the great things about journaling, is to be able to identify these key swing cards in games that make the biggest impact, so you can know if you need more of them in your deck.
Traditionally, some of the biggest swing cards in the game are just King Swords and Rose Roads, so getting economy that you can then play with other economy is not a giant shock that it's good. But just, you know, if you have a chance to play economy, you generally want to. Like, even if you have a lot. In first edition, you'd often find that, like, you'd just be like, alright, well, I just drew into some economy, I'll keep it as intrigue fodder. But in this game, you just want more gold. It never really hurts.
Alright, Glazer, so let me tell you about what decks we had to build. We were told, well, I gave an option to both Matt and Ryan. I said, you can either build a Martell dragon or a Tyrell dragon. So, and I said I would build one of them as well. All three of us ended up building a Tyrell dragon. So the three decks are here. I like to go to the first one, which is 191643 for people that are clicking along. I'd like you to take a quick look and tell us what's good and what's bad about it, Glazer.
Okay, so you're running the wrong number of cards is the first real problem. Pros play 61. That new Tyrell card, I don't know what it's called, but chuck a card to give plus strength. Does anyone know what that's called?
Oh, Crown of Golden Roses, I believe.
Yeah, Crown of Golden Roses needs to be in this deck. Just looking straight at attachments to start. Heartsbane, Crown of Golden Roses. I don't think I would run Paxter at all in this deck. I don't really love giving that 1/4 cost ward target. I mean, maybe a 1 of isn't the end of the world.
Let's talk about Paxter. So Paxter normally has great value when he gives you gold and he reduces your events. But the only event that actually costs anything in this first deck is Nightmares. So I'm siding with Aaron in the fact that Paxter probably has less value than he would normally.
Oh, I see, because not a lot of events. Okay.
Yeah, I definitely want the chuck a card thing, so that Paxter could probably just become that attachment. Too High Garden. I don't love Shirakia. Shirakia might become a... I don't know the name of cards, so I'm just going to say what they do. Actually, I do. Support of the People. I'd probably go down to 1 High Garden, 1 Mander, and then...
Run support?
Run support.
Why?
I don't really love drawing dupes, and drawing into those extra Support of the Peoples are never going to be worse than getting you economy.
So this is Ryan's... Matt's deck.
Yes.
So Matt, why don't you talk a little bit about some of the synergies that you tried to create in this deck, and have 2 High Gardens.
One more thing. You probably want the third Randall, especially if you're going to run 3 Marjorie.
Oh, I see. Okay, so what I was going for here with Tyrell Dragon is I took some cues from Lannister Dragon, and then I took some cues from Lannister Dragon with the inclusion of Miri and Magister Illyrio. We've got Ser Jorah there and the Reducer. Shirak Shia, it's a one-of just to provide a little bit of extra stand in when you're doing like a big turn. Being able to trigger Shirak Shia on, say, Renly Baratheon or even Miri Mazdor seems pretty strong. I also have a Handmaiden in there to round out the curve and also provide a little bit more stand for, in this case, Marjorie. Personally, I don't like the Crown of Golden Roses because I feel like Heartsbane does the exact same thing without having to shuck cards.
Yeah. Oh, I agree.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, Crown of Golden Roses is really good. Try it out.
What makes Crown of Golden Roses better?
It doesn't make it better. It's you want redundancy. I believe you should be running 3 Randall in the deck just because Randall puts so much pressure closing quickly on your opponent. And being able to get that extra Randall stand, you don't want to run 2 Heartsbane because dead dupes of attachments are the worst. But having a Heartsbane and a Crown of Golden Roses gives you that redundancy without having to fill up with dead dupes.
Okay. So what I'm going for with this deck is I have a typical Tyrell lots of power icons, lots of renown, almost Tyrell Summer-like deck, except we've got Miri in there to provide some extra intrigue pressure and also provide some repeatable kill effects. We've also got some synergies here. Miri synergizes very well with Highgarden. If I attack with Miri and my opponent is forced to, you know, overblock her, then I can pull her out with Highgarden and then use her in a different challenge. I also really like the possibilities of, let's say I combine Sirio with Miri Mazdoor. I can attack from military with Sirio and Miri, stealth two military targets, then pull out Sirio with Highgarden, and Miri still attacking for military with two stealth targets. Once I started sensing those synergies there, I realized, okay, I see where this is going. And that's really why I think two Highgarden is very important to get this deck rolling. Highgarden's also really good in it's going to be really good, I think, in the post Valor Mergulis metagame, because Highgarden gets better when you have small boards. Yep. Okay. The Paxter Redwine, that one, I was going back and forth between Littlefinger and Paxter Redwine. I chose Paxter Redwine because I felt like this deck was starting to get creep up on too many five cost characters, but, yeah, he could become a Littlefinger pretty easily. Let's see.
So I think this deck might just want a little bit more kill. Once you're running Miri, you're already running something that might be leaning toward heavy kill. I don't think you have to go all in the way Lannister would, but I would run at least one, maybe two put.
And yeah, I was actually thinking for a while there, two put to the sword. Maybe Tears of Lys, depending on, you know, how playtesting turns out.
Miri synergizes extremely well with Put, because they often have to overextend so much to try and stop her that they leave themselves wide open. It's the, you know, Lannister.
Oh, I see. The two-pronged attack.
Yep.
Yeah. Okay.
For this, if they can stop Miri, even if they, like, you don't have another way to really punish them. You're kind of hoping Renown will do the job.
Yes. Renown is to really push the, because one thing Lannister is known for not having so much of is power icons to really close the game out. So what I'm going for with this deck is to push power challenges with lots of Renown to really close the game out.
What do you think of the plots, Aaron?
I think the Battle of Oxross is a cool idea. I don't know if I'd run it.
Yeah, that's one I'd like to experiment with.
It's just, that could, like, while Battle of Oxross is good, so are things like Summons and Building, and that allows you to cut down on the redundancy and locations as well, and get some extra dudes in there. I like Calm, Close, Confiscation. Time of Plenty.
Yes, that's coming out in the Lannister box, because this episode is going up after the Lannister box will be out.
I don't think I like A Time of Plenty, partially because you're going to outdraw everyone.
Okay.
Like, just the sheer amount of draw in your deck, you don't want to give them free draw to help them catch up to you. Because if they see that right card, you give them extra draw. Like, if you're leveraging an advantage, you don't want to say, but here's a little bit for you, too.
I'm going to lean with Matt on this, Glazer. So
you like this card more than I do, though.
Of course I like it more. So one of the things like that happens with draw is that draw propagates itself. And I want to explain that a little bit. If you have a whole bunch of draw effects in your deck, which Tyrell does really, really well, if you look at, you know, Renly Baratheon, you look at Butter Bumps, you look at Pleasure Barge is a great example, the Mander
and the Gift of Overread.
Yeah. What you need sometimes is to kind of kick off that draw, is to get that first draw. Once you do, like, so you get off a Mander and you're going to run into, you know, a Pleasure Barge, and that's going to let you draw three cards, and that's going to get you a Butter Bumps.
But this isn't counting coppers. This is one extra card.
Right.
At that point, that one extra card, I feel, is more likely, when you have this much draw, that one extra card is more likely to benefit your opponent than you.
You have to remember that he needs the summer cards in order to trigger the Knights of the Summer.
That's part of this. We've got a summer theme going on here with the Knights of Summer.
It has great six income, reserve of seven. So in my mind, you know, if you're going to be playing the Knights of the Summer, you're going to be playing A Time of Plenty. If you're not playing Knights of the Summer,
I would probably cut Knights of the Summer as four cost Renown, which I guess is your second four coster that could be warded, right? It's doable. Song of Summer has fantastic synergy with the other knight anyway.
House Florent Knight. So the problem I've discovered from playing a bit of Tyrell with the House Florent Knight is when you have a lot of one strength characters, it can often be very awkward to play. There's a reason why I think Wama, his Sun Garden deck, he doesn't have any reducer characters. So, and he doesn't have Arbor Knights either, which makes a lot of sense if he's relying on that House Florent Knight. So I thought about House Florent Knight, but the reason why I didn't put it in here is because I'm running six reducers. All with strength one.
Yeah, I think I would probably run a couple anyway, just on the theory that, and yeah, no, I'm running a different deck in my head. I think I'm also running whatchamacallit, Queen of Thorns in my head too.
Oh yes, yes, that makes a lot of sense.
So okay. I just looked down and did not see Queen of Thorns, which makes sense, which is a perfectly valid good decision that, you know, I'd have to test to know whether I'd want her or not. But in my head, I have like more jumping happening as a way to like try and leverage murder.
All right, so I want you to rank this deck from 1 to 10. Be cruel.
Honestly, 6. Given what you're starting with, it's slightly above average. It's not like... There's enough like changes that I think are fairly simple to make that I can't give it a 7, which is like good. But I think it's above average. Like, I think most people aren't going to come up with a deck that's quite this good with this.
Aw, thanks, Aaron.
So, one of the things we talked about... Yep. No, one of the things we talked about, Matt, was cost curve.
Yes.
And hyperbolic calculator to see how many of a particular card we might need in a deck. Did you use any of those?
Yeah, I relied on agotsetup.com. Just look at the cost curves and look at how the setups are going to come out.
Hey, Rose Garden should totally just be the freaking Gold Road.
Oh, the Rose Road, right?
Yeah, Rose Garden should just be the Rose Road.
Yeah.
Without any question, if you're running.
The locations, I think, are going to require some testing because the Arbor, if you don't get it early, it's 4 gold to put out there. It can be really hard to pay for, and it's great to set up, but that's 4 gold of your setup. So I think playtesting will say how many Rose Gardens, how many Arbors, how many Rose Roads, and how many Ocean Roads, now that that's going to be an option.
And you don't want to be drawing your dupe to your Arbor, like, ever, really.
Well, there is one case when you want to, and that's when you get it off of Insight with Renly, because then you draw another card.
Wouldn't I just be better off drawing the other card I would have got? Any final thoughts before we move on to the next deck?
You should also consider duping that Arbor against Greyjoy, because, you know...
Oh, that's right, you know.
They're pretty good at making you cry. And then Arbor.
And in Europe, you know, the Pyromancers. They seem to love their Pyromancers in Europe. So,
Pyromancer is a really powerful card.
You should be taking Pyromancers to Worlds. Ooh. People, this is after Worlds, but you should be taking Pyromancers there. We're going to see some Bera, aren't we, Glazer?
I would assume we're going to see some Bera. I would assume we're going to see some Night's Watch. And I would assume we're going to see some Stark. And that if those are 3 of the 4 or 5 most popular... And, God, they're great against Martell, too, right? So that's 4 of the 5 most popular houses basically guaranteed that it's really good against. And you just got to suck it up against Lannister. You're drawing a lot.
So are we going to make Worlds predictions that offer an episode that's going to come out after Worlds?
Yeah, that's what we just did.
I already did a whole podcast of Worlds predictions. It's cool.
Yeah.
All right. 190131, Glazer. What do you think of that one?
Tyrell plus Targaryen. 62 cards. That's one too many. Guys, 61 cards.
Okay, I'll make a note of that. So my 61st card, Aaron, back to my deck, it's going to be the Crown of Golden Roses.
There you go. Problem solved.
Yeah, I already have the experimental slot with Shirek Chia, so I can't have 2 experimental slots.
Yeah, you should probably have been running Aggo, which I wasn't sure if it was loyal or not. But if you're going to keep that summer module, you want Aggo.
Yeah, I thought about him. Yeah. Over to the next deck.
I like one-drop events. I don't like this particular group of it, especially.
Why? Come on.
It feels like the deck... Okay, this is going to be an extreme... That kind of thing makes the deck an extremely high skill cap deck. Like, it's very, very hard to be able to play a deck a different way every game based on what events you're seeing, what events you aren't.
Exactly. It changes the consistency of a deck. So when you have things that are like power claim events versus kill events or search events, it makes it more difficult to play the deck in a consistent fashion. And if you can't play it in a consistent way, it means that every game is different. Like Aaron was saying, high skill cap, but that also means that you have to adapt to their board presence, your own draw, and a bunch of other factors. As your day goes on in a tournament, that becomes harder and harder to do. Now, it does give this great uncertainty against all your opponents when you play them. I don't know if that's a good trade-off.
It depends on the size of the tournament. I feel like that's a better trade-off in a smaller tournament where surprising people has extra value. In a larger tournament, unless everyone knows you and is like scouting you for the cut, like if you're guaranteed to make it that far, it might be helpful. But short of that, it's probably not. I feel like this deck is just going to be inconsistent. Like, it's not running the Arbor, but part of the reason one of the main reasons to run Tyrell, Tark, excuse me, is to get those high costers going and to be able to use and reuse them. And that costs gold to both get them into play and for Illyrio to use him over and over again. The Arbor is such a great way to do that, that not running the Arbor seems awkward for this deck.
Yeah, one of the other things talking about the overall ability to draw is the lack of pleasure barrages. We're only running one, so some of our draw effects are kind of reduced. We're only running the single two Renly, one Butter Pumps. It means that the consistency of the deck overall be reduced a bit. I do see the Battle of the Ox Cross again here, so I think that same trend of being able to close out a game or use it to kill with Miri
This deck needs to make a decision about what it wants to do. A lot of the variation in events to me says that we want a rush deck so you're not seeing too much, but you have to try and guard against things that are and aren't there. And I don't know how this does that. I really, really strongly disagree with only two Renly.
All right, I'm going to let Ryan talk about the deck a little bit. This is his baby. So Ryan, tell us what your thoughts were going in.
Well, after I built it, I kind of talked about, even in that last email I sent out, I was like, yeah, I just haven't focused. My idea was to build this kind of rush deck and to give me a lot of options. And that's kind of why I included some of the one-off events. And it was also, I just couldn't quite figure out which direction I wanted the deck to play. And I didn't include, for instance, like the Arbor, I felt like didn't quite fit that rush style. And that I couldn't kind of, and I'm also not running Wildfire, so it's like I'm just trying to rush characters on the board. So it's kind of my idea.
You're thinking on the Arbor? You're thinking on the Arbor is bang on, Ryan. It's not a rush card. It's a card where you're getting this like kind of larger tempo that Aaron was talking about earlier. If you want to just spew forth and just hit your opponent hard, it's definitely not the card that you would include. However, what you would want to include is a whole lot more draws. Those pleasure barges should probably just go up. And what I would suggest is that if you're going rush, you got to go balls out. You have to go full on rush and just drop any of these other cards where you're trying to kill things, or just go rush, focus on that, get your extra power, and you know, maybe have a nightmares or two to deal with those stranger threats. But at that point, you might even want to say that I'm not going to be running Miri Mazdur. Yeah, too expensive for a rush deck.
I would definitely cut Miri.
Yeah, I'm going to run more, you know, more Jorah. I'll have three of those. I'll have three Illyrio. I'll have more Handmaidens so that I can stand Marjorie to push through those key challenges and just push the rush theme. So I think that's what you need to do, is you have to pick a theme and you have to just make those hard decisions to cut it every time. I think this deck, you know, has a very solid base, but it isn't there because of that lack of decision. Personally, I'd give it a 5. What would you think, Aaron?
Probably a 3 or 4, somewhere in that vicinity. If it were one deck, it would be higher, but this is 2 and maybe 3 decks that just kind of got smashed together, which holds it down.
All right. Any final thoughts on this before we move to the last one, which is obviously mine?
No.
On to me.
Is this your deck? Yep. Hey, look at you running all the shit I said we should run in this deck. Look, there's 2 Put to the Sword. I swear to God, I didn't look at your deck before this. There's Put to the Sword, Support of the People, Tears of Lys, Counting Coppers. It's almost like we've built a deck or two together in the past. The one of the locations. Wow, this is obnoxious. I really do think that you should be running... If you're running 3, you're only running 2 Randall. I think you should probably run 3 Randall, man. You got close call in there. Go big or go home. Right. I mean, you're not running 1-drop attachments that I like, because I think they're also really good for setup. So
yeah, I'm running Seal instead.
Yeah, I think I'd run 1 Seal and then 1 of each. And I'm not sure what I'd cut, but I have to think about that.
What do you hate about it? Come on, focus on the bad. Look at the number of cards.
Yeah, it's got 1 too many. You're running a Viserion for that extra fucking card, which is obnoxious. Honestly, you probably just cut Sir Colin, who's a good efficient card, but like doesn't actually have to be there, right? Like he's just a good card. This is more or less how I build it.
So, for me, the power of Tyrell Dragon is actually in a tempo game. It's being able to push through kill to keep my opponent's board down while putting a tremendous pressure on them with Renown. Mm-hmm. And I think all the draw really feeds well into the Milk of the Poppies and a low event base that you can consistently still get because of that draw. For that reason, I'm running 3 Pleasure Barge, I'm running the Mander, I'm running 3 of the Renly that lets me draw the Butter Bumps, and the Knights of the Summer were actually inspired by Ryan. So, I think the main takeaway from this experience was actually we all had a decent cost curve, which is super important. And I was surprised by that because normally one of the first mistakes new players make is a poor cost curve. So I was really happy that people like went and used the setup analyzer, they checked their cost curve, they made it was there. Icon spreads on all the decks were good, which is also another mistake. Like just using the basic Thrones DB icons to see, you know, how many do have intrigue, how many have power, how many have military is a good starting point. And my deck was actually the one that had the worst icon spread, and that was something I was hoping someone would key off and say, why do you only have 10 characters with int? Is that a hole in your deck? Now, those 10 characters happen to be the higher strength characters, so that perceived hole isn't as bad. Exactly.
It's also, you probably don't want Viserion in this deck.
You're right. What do I want?
Yeah, I don't think Tyrell needs Viserion.
You want Aggo.
I want Aggo, or I want Regal, or both. Absolutely.
I'm almost certain I want Aggo. He's 5 cost, and he stands himself with 3 of your plots, and if anyone else is running Summer, he stands himself with that, too. Yeah, yep. Stand is good. Self-stand is good.
Mm-hmm. All right, for you right now, gentlemen, I'm making that change. Live on the air.
I actually thought about, if I didn't do Miri, I thought about doing a deck that had, I think, 2 Aggo, 1 Recaro, and 2 Blood of My Blood to get them. And maybe one of the Devoted Blood Riders.
Mary works with
she Recaro. Does?
With Recaro.
Oh, that's right. Yes.
He's killed for Flame.
Yes, that's right.
So it's not a bad idea. I even might want 2 Aggo with the way this deck looks.
Maybe the second Paxer?
I want a second Aggo. I want a third.
Oh, whoa. My Paxer's key because I'm running those actual cost events.
Yeah, Clutch of the Sword means Paxer has to stay.
All my other events being no cost is actually very surprising to a lot of opponents when you just go in there and you're like, oh, okay, all tiers. And they're like, but you have no gold. I don't need gold.
One of your summer plots, I'm specifically thinking Harvest, but I could be wrong, probably wants to be Song of Summer. You just get so much extra benefit as Tyrell out of Song of Summer.
What's the extra benefit I get from Tyrell from Song of Summer?
Against Baratheon, it's a free Randall stand. With Miri, you get
Why would it be a free Randall stand?
If Stannis Baratheon has locked down Randall.
Okay. All right. So we talked about the decks. We talked about what we learned. Glazer, what do you think? I mean, Ryan's going to be busy next week, so he's not going to have any homework because he's going to be, you know, going more than 50% at Worlds.
Yeah.
Playing a Targ Night's Watch deck, right, Ryan?
Unfortunately, I could not convince him to play Baratheon Summer instead.
So, Matt. Yes. Homework laser.
Oh, I'm giving him homework?
Oh, baby.
What would you, if you were trying to teach someone intricacies of this game, and it was Matt, who's got some experience now under his belt, he's been playing a lot, what would you be asking him to do as homework?
Oh, okay, that's simple enough. Having played you, I think what you're doing that's most problematic is you're making challenges. You're too worried about winning challenges. I want you to focus on playing more defensively. I want you to count times when you could make a challenge, but you're not sure it's the right thing, and I want you to try, even if like it blows up in your face for these practice games. If you're not at Worlds, might as well be practice. I want you to not make the challenge when you're not sure if you should, and make your opponent beat you instead of trying to beat your opponent. If you're playing a Barad dominance deck, they have to beat you. You don't have to beat them. You'll win if you just wait.
You put them on a clock right away. Yeah, absolutely.
So focus on not challenging, seeing when you can avoid that challenge. Also consider more carefully what to kneel. Don't I found you were automatically kneeling whatever the highest cost thing I was. Look at things that have stealth. Look at things that have powerful effects. Don't be afraid to kneel them. I think you knelt a couple times Nymeria in our game, and I was just like, I don't really care about her for challenges. I can use her effect while she's sitting down. Don't get rid of the big guy. Get rid of whatever you think is going to be problematic.
Problematic, okay.
Like, look toward the challenge phase and say, what will this do that causes me trouble? Like, does this have
there
this,
we are.
One okay. of this icon? Mm-hmm. Is this the only one of this icon? So on. Like, is the only way they can win a power challenge by having this power icon?
Glazer finally hit the nail on the head. So what he's asking you to do now is to think about the challenge phase during the marshalling phase. And that's key because of the type of deck you're playing. Being able to kneel out those key characters that you know are going to cause problems later is what it's all about. But it's also about determining what your opponent's going to do in the marshalling phase if you're first. What are they most likely to marshal? Why did they play that high economy plot? Obviously, they have X or Y going on. So the same thing we're doing with events, the same thing we're doing with plots, we now have to do with characters.
Oh, man. Predictive kneeling.
Predictive kneeling.
And then dominance and power winning base challenges. Mm-hmm. Because if you draw enough with the red keep, you will win.
So we want you to guess the characters they're going to marshal now. Do you think you're doing enough guessing in this game yet?
No, obviously not. I need to guess more. Or I need to run more copies of Ruby of R'hllor so I can see their hand.
Usually sir, help me here. Yeah, don't run that. But what you should be doing, and be very careful, if you have a scene in flames, you never ever really want to be kneeling something in marshalling. You always want to save that for the
Oh, challenge. Yes. I also run three copies of Even-Handed Justice as a rule because that card is so flexible. You can do so much stuff with it.
Are you running the thing that makes events cheaper?
I'm not doing that.
Strongly.
Yes. So what I'd like you both to do is actually watch the World Finals as well. I would like you to see these top people's play. If you can't watch it live, that's understandable. Mm-hmm. I'm sure it's going to be up on YouTube or Twitch or something. You know, watch that recording. Mm-hmm. I think there's a lot of value in that. But I also want you to take one of the decks that is played in one of the final games, any of the top eight. And play it a few times, because I'd like to make sure that both of you get outside your comfort zone and play decks that are different than the ones you've been playing for the last 3 weeks. Now, Ryan, for the next 2 days or whatever it is that you're at home, I want you to play as much as you possibly can with that Targ deck. I want you just to focus like crazy, because we need you to go that 50-50 at Worlds. All right?
I am playing in the Laughing Tree tournament on Tuesday.
Perfect. So a lot of people...
I'm just in my flight just to make it.
Great. A lot of people are worried about, you know, showcasing their secret tech. Don't worry about that. Play the same deck you're going to play at the main event. Maybe take down the Laughing Tree with it. That'd be amazing. What an episode, Sean. That was a great one, wasn't it?
That was great. What a smooth transition.
Yeah, and I mean, it was fantastic how much you participated. I know you were there the whole time, but you were pretty quiet. What's up with that?
I decided that more longing for the heart would make you all love me a bit more.
Well, it worked for me. I'm really looking forward to our drive. So there's a big event going on for FFG soon, right? This Battle of the Trident where you get to tweet what side you want and determine what the next cycle is going to be like.
Oh, is it tweet-based? I thought it was you win a tournament, you get... Oh, that's more value, right?
You get votes, and then there's Twitter. There's a whole bunch of different things, yeah. So Alex is telling us to vote red.
Oh, no, he's saying green.
No, I'm looking at his little Beyond the Wall.
You've changed it. It was green. I saw that a minute ago.
Are you voting green, Sean?
I know, Alex. He wants... It's green. Green way or no way?
Yeah, okay, well, he's wrong as usual. I mean, the only thing he's right about is rules. So, what are you voting?
I'm voting green.
Really?
Yeah, I want Trixie Fun Maesters.
Okay, cool. Sean, you know the three of us, like the whole discussion we had was the three of us were supposed to pick different sides and not all choose green.
Why am I getting stuck with blue then? Blue's the worst.
I got stuck with red. You want armies? I'll switch you.
No, you like armies. You like big fun.
I want green.
Go blue fork. Because Laura and Fitch likes knights, and that's the only thing I can think about that's cool about them.
You are the worst blue rep ever. I think you fail for that. Everyone's going to have to vote red. First of all, these huge giant characters are a pain in the butt, and the only thing that can take them out are armies. Because how else are you going to kill Tywin? Like, really? So these armies are going to be low-cost characters at like the 4 or 5 cost slot, which is perfect. It's exactly what the game needs. They're going to have cool effects, and they're going to dominate over these high-cost characters that have been causing so much problems for the game. So the only way to fix the game, Sean, is to vote red.
But just think about how cool...
I mean, do you love the game or do you hate the game? That's what I'm asking you, Sean.
You don't want me to tell you that on...
If you love the game, you vote red.
But think about how cool it would be to have a Lannister deck with all of the knights, Sir Gregor, the new knight that came out, Emery Lork, Jaime, and now you've got the knight's agenda, so you just draw cards for having knights like at 1.0. That sounds totally fair and balanced.
Yeah, okay. Valor's coming in Shalik's in 2 weeks. Do you have any other information?
No.
Citadel Quartermaster sent us some stuff, but me and you didn't get to see it, so I don't have a lot to say about it. How about you?
I don't have enough to say about it yet. I'm doing some research on it. And we have a review, don't we, in the next episode?
I guess in the next episode we're going to do it. We were going to do it this episode, but then Alex got sick, and he has the product. So it's really hard for us to review it without seeing it. Normally he's going to, you know, set up a little video cast for us and show us it. But, yeah, we're just going to say till next time.
Are we sure about that? Because I thought it was next episode, but I could be wrong, and we could have just recorded that incorrectly. Maybe we should confer with Alex.
It's the next episode now for sure. And give us a snappy sign-off there, Sean.
Snappy sign-off.
No, we've done that one before. You have tried.
Oh, damn, that's not original enough.
Yeah. My daughter says purple unicorns with stars are powerful. Snappy sign-off.
You just schooled me on the snappy sign-off. That was very good. I'm going to edit everything, yeah. Everything I did, and we'll just put in my daughter says.
Well, I mean, 9-year-olds know stuff.
Thank you for listening to Beyond the Wall. If you have any comments or would like to be featured on the cast, please let us know by email at beyondthewallpodcast@gmail.com or through Facebook at Beyond the Wall Podcast. If you've enjoyed the music, check out more of Antti Martikainen's work at the link embedded in the chapter data. See you all next week.